Hey guys, thanks for joining us for the sixth episode in season four of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guests on this episode include singer-songwriter Buddy Jewell. We'll discuss the 20th anniversary re-release of the single Sweet Southern Comfort with special guest artist Clint Black, the Bellamy Brothers, and Marty Rabin, lead singer of Shenandoah. We'll also visit with legendary drummer James Diamond Williams of the Ohio Players. We'll talk about their history, the mark they've left on music since their inception in 1959, and a drive for inclusion into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum in Cleveland. If you would, please take the time to subscribe, comment, leave some feedback, and of course, share with your friends. Now, if you're at a restaurant and a friend snags a fry off of your plate, is that cool? Or are you immediately reassessing that friendship? Well, a poll found that half of us would be annoyed if a friend snags something off of our plate without at least asking first. And fries are the number one food that we don't want to share. Now, it's weird because, well, they're a pretty shareable food. Now, the top foods we don't want to share are fries, pizza, ice cream, and chocolate. Around 1 in 10 people say they won't share under any circumstance. Now, 29% would rather buy someone their own helping than share with them. 15% said it's caused an argument before, and 16% have physically stopped someone from stealing food, like by moving the plate or smacking their hand. 27% said that they will always let someone snag a bite, but that doesn't mean that they're cool with it. A sizable portion said that they just do it to be polite. Now, the poll also found 53% of people regularly have food envy, where you wish that you ordered what someone else got. Been a fan ever since he was on Nashville Star. That was like, I think, 2 years ago. So, I mean, he's still a newbie in the business. Buddy Jewell, and Buddy, it's a privilege to visit with you, brother.
Hey, it's great to visit with you, man. Thanks for having me on.
Now tell us, looking back, how hard is it to believe? How fast did that 20 years go, brother?
You know, some days it does feel like 2 years ago. It really does. It's been an incredible journey. Gosh, it's taken me all around the world, and I still get paid to wear a cowboy hat and sing. I'm a pretty blessed fella.
Now the time on Nashville Star for you, as you look back at it, I mean, how much did that change maybe your view on opportunities that you had? Did you finally, was that finally the little push that you needed maybe for self-confidence, if you will, for it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, by that time I'd been in Nashville for 10 years and, was doing really well as a studio singer, demo singer. I sang on thousands of recordings over about a 9-year period, but just never could get anybody to pull the trigger to sign me and winning the show. I think I tell people, being very honest about it, you know, I think God loves me enough that he created a TV show to get me a record deal because nobody was going to give me one.
And how true to your life is that? I know faith is huge in your life, and the years that we've gone through these past 3 or 4 years, I mean, how much have you had to lean on that just to maintain some sanity, brother?
Well, it is. It's a huge part of my life, and always has been since I was a little kid, you know. But you know, the pandemic and everything really, you know, put things in perspective for a lot of us, for most of us, I'm assuming. But, you know, I learned just to be patient. You know, I can look back at my life and see times where God's always taken care of me, whether I cared if he did or not, because there were many times and years prior I didn't care. It was all about me. And just to see how he's always taken care of us, he's faithful. And, I'm learning day by day, step by step, to just to trust him, because I just look back at it. He's got a great track record with me.
Yeah. And we talked about the 20 years since Sweet Southern Comfort, and for you to have the new release of this and to have some all-time greats to lend a voice to it as well. I mean, what's that mean to you on a personal level, brother?
You know, it honestly, Cameron, it didn't hit me until a couple of months ago, and I realized, I thought, wow, those guys really think enough of me that they're willing to put their stamp of approval on the song by, you know, putting their voices on it. And just to know that you got guys like the Bellamy Brothers and Marty Raven and Clint Black that believe in you enough that they want to be part of a project you're on, that's pretty stout. So but yeah, it I just came to realization one day, man, what a blessing it's been, and to have those guys, are all great guys, and obviously, you know, all of them to me, as far as I'm concerned, are legendary. So to have those three entities on it with me has been spectacular.
Did you guys all record separate or together? Because I can't imagine trying to record in a room with any of them and trying to keep my voice steady at all, right?
No, man, it's like herding squirrels, you know. I thought the studio was gonna be tough. Trying to get the video done for it was, you know, even more challenging. I knew there was a very low probability I would get all three of those to get all four of those guys together, right, in a setting where we could film it. So we chased, you know, actually Marty was the hardest one to catch. Shenandoah's been so busy, you know. Mm-hmm. But they're all very accommodating, and the recording part was easy. I just, you know, they did it in their own studios, yeah, or where they like to do it, and of course, you know, with the advent of the digital music and everything else, it was a lot easier just to kind of phone that in, you know. But the video part was the challenge for sure.
Now you talked about tech. How much have you had to lean on tech since COVID came through, and how good and how bad has that been for you?
Well, I'm technically challenged, let's just say. I was already doing, I do a Facebook Live every Tuesday night at 6 p.m. Central. So I was already kind of in the middle of doing the, you know, from a distance type stuff that we all experienced, you know, the first, you know, several months, a year or whatever, COVID. So I did kind of have that on my side, but the, you know, sometimes it gets, you know, technology gets me in a headlock and won't turn me loose, you know.
and it's hard whenever you get out on the road, because you never know what your reception's going to be like, right?
Oh, well, even today, I'm sitting here keeping my fingers crossed that you and I get to have this conversation all the way through. I live out in the boonies, which is a blessing, you know. It's, yes, really peaceful out here and all that stuff, the horses and cornfields and things like that. But man, the cell service, the internet service here is leaves a lot to be desired.
Now, buddy, for you, how much, as you look back over the last 20 years, you look at the early releases, you look at maybe some of your early songwrites as well, where do you see the biggest difference in your progression? Do you see it in the writes? Do you see it in the performance, or is it just the all around?
I think, well, for me, you know, writing is always a learning process. You know, so that's something that's ongoing for sure. Performance wise, for me, my confidence on stage, the ability to engage an audience and keep them engaged. I think that I've gotten a lot better at that just over time. You know, I've figured out what works and what doesn't work, and having a great band behind me is, it makes it even easier. And I'm very blessed to have a lot of great pickers in my band.
Now, after the show, who were maybe some of the first folks that had your back, that really were the support and the guidance that you needed in the early days after the show?
Well, you know, one of the judges on the show was Tracy Gershon, and she was an A&R there at Sony. And I had actually met Tracy years before, when she worked at an independent label, and they were actually, I had actually been offered a contract, and by the time I could sign it and send it back, the label went out of business. So when I auditioned for the show and I found out she was a judge, I'm like, oh no, they're not going to let me on this show. And I spoke to the executive producer, George Brashear, and said, hey, just so you know, I know her. We know each other. And he said, hey, this is all based on, it's going to be based on what people vote on. Mm-hmm. So we're not really worried about that. So, but Tracy was a great friend, and gave me a lot of guidance, you know, towards management and publishing and stuff like that. So she would be one of the main people. One of the artists, you know, I'd known Trace Atkins for a long time. He and I met back in like 1987. And so Trace was one of the first ones to actually, to be very honest with you, I didn't tour with a whole bunch of people. Trace was one of them, and I sporadically did shows with Brad Paisley, mm-hmm. and that was kind of it. So I didn't have a whole lot of other artists to lean on, but you know, the inner workings, the business side, and everything else, Tracy was a great help.
Now, coming off of a show like that, does Nashville take any? Do they put any credence to you saying, "Hey, I'm Nashville star now," or is it just, "Hey, he's another guy. He's just got a new plaque."
Well, honestly, you know, I've been passed over for 10 years by every major and independent label in town at least twice. Yeah. And so I was kind of in a situation where up until the television show, nobody wanted me. And then I wound up on a record label that prior to the TV show didn't want me. So, and at that time, especially 20 years ago, you know, reality television was really new. I mean, I went to a Sawyer Brown thing the other night. They got a great documentary just came out about their 40 years. And they were really the pioneers of reality TV show music, you know, things. And so, but at that point in time, there were very few reality shows on television. And so I was more of a novelty in Nashville. If it wasn't created by radio, they're really hesitant about it, and I think probably still are in a lot of ways.
Well, now for you, getting Clint, Marty, and the Bellamys together, I mean, when the idea first went out, I mean, what were your intentions? Were you hoping maybe to get maybe one to work with you, and you're like, and you ended up with a handful? Is that how it went?
Yeah, you know what? I didn't really ask a whole lot of people. But Clint was definitely the very first call because he produced the record to begin with. You know, he did a great job producing my first record. I wish Sony had let him do my other one. Well, you and I might be talking on different circumstances. But Clint was great. I mean, he was immediately on board. You know, what can I do? How can I help you? And through the whole process, even the video, you know, he was, you know, giving me advice and tips and everything. You know, I spent a little time around Marty from time to time, and my bass player, Mitchell Brown, is really good friends with Donnie Allen, that plays banjo for Shenandoah, and Donnie's played on some shows with me too. And so they were really instrumental in going to Marty and him saying, "Yeah, I'm interested." And so, they really put that into play. And then the Bellamys, it was just a thing where I'd met Howard and David in passing a time or two, like at CRS or something like that. And I just opened for them, last year, 2022, and got to spend a little time with them on their bus after the show. And so it was kind of fresh in their memory and mine when we decided we were going to do this. And so I thought, all I can do is say no.
Right.
And actually all they could do is say yes. So I was very, very tickled. There were literally maybe maybe three other artists that I had asked if they were interested. And for whatever reasons, they weren't able to. But, man, I was glad. I asked as many as I could, seeing who, hoping I would wind up with at least two. And I got three. So it was great.
That's good stuff. Now tell us about the rest of the new album and how excited you are for the feedback that you've been getting from the listeners as well.
Well, you know, I'm still working on putting a project together, man. It's been slow. I've been so busy this year and traveling, especially, just really sucks the creative juices out of me. And I don't want to, you know, in the past, I've always made records where I relied on other writers, you know, for some of the material or a lot of it. And I don't want to really do a record where I've written everything, because there's so many other great writers and songs out there. I think that's kind of cheating, you know, my fans if I just try to do it all on my own. So I'm taking my time. In the process, you know, the video's out on CMT.com. The single just went to number one on Cashbox, the independent, you know, singles chart last month. And so I'm just enjoying the ride. The people are loving the new rendition of Sweet Southern Comfort with those guys on it with me. And I'm really enjoying, you know, seeing what people think about it.
Now that things have been open back up for a couple of years, I mean, how has your goal setting changed over the last couple of years over what we all went through in 2020? How do you set goals realistically now moving forward?
I'll be very honest with you, man. I'm not one of those guys that really I don't have this list of goals written down that people look at every morning or whatever. I kind of go where kind of God leads me, and maybe I should do more of that. Maybe I'm being lazy. Who knows? But my main priority is keep the bills paid and the wife happy. Anything over that is great. You know, I'm really enjoying it. You know, I've had such a great run, and the fans have been so wonderful to me, and country radio has too. And I'm back out. I'm traveling all over the world. I just got back from Ireland. I'm headed for Spain here in a couple of weeks. And, you know, just going where the good Lord leads me, man. He says in his word, we shouldn't really plan too much in the future. He's kind of got all the cards in his hand on that anyway.
He does have it in his hand, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Now, buddy, where is, as you look back at, you talked about Ireland and Spain and the different places that you've played, is there any place that you look back and you're like, I can't believe we actually had the opportunity to play there?
Oh, wow. Well, China would be one. Mm-hmm. You know, and another big thing for me was I got to go with the Sergeant Major of the Army and do a USO tour of Afghanistan, Iraq, Kuwait a few years back, and we went to forward operating bases. So we weren't staying in the Hilton, you know, and getting up meeting generals every morning. We were getting on the Blackhawks and flying out into the desert of the mountains and sitting down at these little outposts that were right there on the front lines. And so that was really exciting to me, and also very humbling to see just how wonderful our troops are. You know, a lot of people don't give them the credit they deserve. That goes for first responders as well. I'm sure you feel the same way. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, those are places. The Grand Ole Opry, I mean, people ask me all the time, what's your favorite place to play? And it's always been the Grand Ole Opry, yeah, just because of just the nostalgia and the history behind it. And, you know, I can't say I've played in some beautiful places and you know, seen things, done things I never thought I'd get to do. But that really has been the pinnacle for me.
And standing in that circle the first time, what were your knees doing? I mean, they weren't being still, were they?
No, you know, ironically, Porter Wagner had befriended me several years before Nashville started hiring me to sing demos for him. And so I had an open invitation from him, you know, to come out and hang out, you know, when he had room on his guest list. And I'd taken my mom with me one time. This was probably 1999 or 2000, something like that. Mm-hmm. And just not too far. Well, maybe a little closer to the show. But on a Saturday night, you know, they dropped the curtain in between shows. They cleared the house. And people backstage get to go out and stand in the circle and take a picture with the WSM microphone. And so mom and I were there, and she said, why don't you go out there and get your picture? And so I did. And I came back, and she said, you know, someday, buddy, you're going to be standing in that circle and singing for real. And so I kind of had that in my mind when I walked out there. I honestly don't remember much about the performance. It was so surreal. It was like it was like an out-of-body experience. I felt very, actually pretty comfortable. I think it's because I felt like I was watching it instead of participating. You know, when I came off, you know, Clint brought me on. Mm-hmm. And when I came off stage, somebody grabbed me and said, hey, did you see that? And I'm like, what? And they said, you got to stand ovation when you went on and another one when you came off. And I didn't even really realize it. You know, I was just so caught up in the moment and standing on that wood there from the Ryman. and thinking about all the people that stood there before, you know, Patsy Cline, Johnny Cash, Marty Robinson. It was just a really incredible feeling for me.
That's right. Well, buddy, I always want to make sure and let our listeners, our viewers know where they can keep up with all the stuff you've got going on, the new music, the upcoming tours, social media. Where's best place folks can keep up with everything you got going, brother?
Yeah, and thank you for allowing me to do that. So buddyjewel.com, and Jewel has two L's, J-E-W-E-L-L. It's probably the main base. You can find my tour schedule there, merchandise and all kind of stuff, pictures and videos. I am on Facebook, Instagram, X.
That's hard to get used to.
Imposters out there.
That's hard to get used to.
Yeah, no kidding. Watch out for imposters out there. There's a bunch of people saying they're me, but, you know, look for the blue check mark, the blue circle, the white check mark or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then there's a great app that I encourage people to download because you can follow any artist in any genre. It's called Bands in Town. Mm-hmm. It's free. Yep. And you can track your favorite artists on there and you get updates on whenever they post a new show and you can actually have it send you reminders as the show's getting closer. So Bands in Town's a great way to actually get out and see me.
That's good stuff. Well, buddy, like I said before, it's a privilege to visit with you today, man. I enjoyed getting to know you a little better, and I look forward to catching you when you come out Southwest Oklahoma way.
Man, I hope to be out there sometime next year for sure.
Well, buddy, again, it's a privilege. I thank you for your time, and hopefully we'll do it again real soon.
You bet, Cameron. Thanks for being a blessing to me, man.
Now, you've heard of hot wine tours and farm tours. Kentucky has the Bourbon Trail, and now South Carolina has a mayonnaise trail. If you're a mayonnaise fanatic, you know Duke's, especially if you're in the South. The brand was created by Eugenia Duke in Greenville, South Carolina more than 100 years ago, and it has a big loyal following. Now, Greenville has an unofficial mayo guide, which includes 20 stops, showcasing mayonnaise in different ways. There are 6 snack spots, 14 meal must-haves, and 4 historical stops celebrating Duke's. The trail is a self-guided tour, so you can hit up the featured places whenever you'd like, since, you know, 20 mayonnaise dishes in a day is a lot. Now, the trail also seems open-ended, like the Bourbon Trail. As long as the places offer these dishes, you'll be able to do it, so you don't have to cancel your Thanksgiving plans to squeeze in an emergency trip to South Carolina. Well, 20 years ago, I had the chance to visit with a legendary funk band, the Ohio Players. James Diamond Williams and I hit off a friendship that's lasted 20 years, and now we have a chance to visit again, possible inclusion into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum. With that, here is my visit with Diamond Williams. Well, Diamond, tell us kind of how the band got started. I know originally it was the Ohio Untouchables. Was that what we started out as?
Well, not me and you. I'm telling you. No, not me. And not me either. True. Cameron. Listen, the band started out the Ohio Untouchables in 1959. I was 9 years old. I wasn't part of the band then, Cameron. I was 6th, 3rd grade, 4th grade, or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Dreaming up my dreams for the next 20 years, okay? Mm-hmm. But, started in 1959. Sugarfoot was not even part of that band at that time. It was Greg Webster, who was the drummer, mm-hmm. Satch, saxophone player, Pee Wee, trumpet player, and Marshall, the bass player, Carlin Rock. Those were the 4 primary members that continue on through some process of the Ohio Players, okay? Now, in 63 or 64, Sugarfoot was brought in. Prior to Sugarfoot, there was a guy called Robert Ward, okay, that was a guitar player and sang vocals. So I think he still might be around today. But he was the lead guitar player. 63 or 64, they called him Sugarfoot because he was green. He was young. He was a greenhorn. Called you Sugarfoot. Sugarfoot, you know. So they called him Sugarfoot. And Sugar, and he came in 63, 64, and that's when they changed the name to the Ohio Players, okay? Mm-hmm. Around 70, 69 or 70, they brought on a guy called Junie Morrison, Walter Junie Morrison. And about a year or so after that, they brought a couple of horn players in, Marvin Pierce and Bruce Napier, who played trumpet. Marvin played trombone with the band. Bruce went to trumpet. Of course, Pee-wee was there. They had a five-piece horn section at that time. Mm-hmm. Marvin had been previously with a band that I was with at that time called the Overnight Low. Mm-hmm. We were called the Majestics coming out of high school. We changed our name to the Overnight Low. What a fancy name, you know? People say it every day. The Overnight Low is going to be, here we are. That's what we thought. Anyway, that group turned into the group Sun. But prior to going into the group Sun, Marvin had been in the Majestics with Clarence Willis, Chet, who's with the band today presently, and myself, okay? And I had never seen the band. This is 1971, the Ohio Players at that time had Pain and Pleasure out at that time. Pleasure was coming out right at that time or whatever, Cameron, and right as when they had an occasion where they needed a drummer, Greg Webster had gotten sick. I had never seen the band. Well, from them giving me the invitation to sit in and see if I could replace him for that weekend, we had the occasion of playing with the Ohio Players, and I was with that band called Overnight Low. Mm-hmm. I had never seen them, but I had heard Cameron in different places that we would go to. You know, y'all guys are good, meaning the Overnight Low, y'all guys. But there's one better. You know how you look in the mirror and they say there's one better. And they said the one better is a group called the Ohio Players. That dismayed me a lot, Cameron. I kind of took a little salt in when they said that. But nonetheless, I'd never seen them. Some other guys in the band had, Marvin being one of them. Mm-hmm. He went on to be with them, as I mentioned, and he called and said, "You know, Greg had gotten sick. Can I send him for them for a weekend?" Now, back to the time that we played with them, Cameron, is at a place called the Lakeview Palladium. I thought at that time we were getting ready to like take this group that I'd heard about that was called, you know, Wyatt Earp, you know, and all these Doc Holliday and all these terrible characters around town. And we was just going to just beat them up, just annihilate them. Hey, you know what? They've heard of certain people, but they haven't heard of me. Did you hear me say that, Cameron? I said that, okay? Listen, we did our thing on stage and they came behind us. And you could hear daggone water just flowing because they swashed us up. Man, they knocked us out. The crowd was going crazy. They hit that big mops was going out just wiping the floor with our butt. You know what I mean? And I took that whooping very bad. I took it away. But all night long, I said to my girlfriend then, to my wife now, that means like 56 years ago or so, Cameron, that this happened. I told her then, I said, you know, I said the band was incredible. Uniforms, lights, all kinds of stuff they had going on at that time. Just a level so above what we were doing with our local. You know what right. I mean? It's like, oh, my God. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I said, but the drummer played a shuffle with them all night. I could hear that. I'm tuned right in. I said, he played a shuffle. The band played kind of funky around him. I told her, I said, her name is LaDon. I said, LaDon, if I ever get a chance to play with this band, I'm going to take his job. Ring that door, that ring happened. It was Marvin. Can you sit there for the week? I said, yeah. So I went to practice with them. Cameron, this is a true story. It's in my book that I'm writing today. They went to the hospital and they fired him at the hospital. He was the leader of the band. His name was Greg Webster. Mm-hmm. When I sat in that weekend, they said, we have found a drummer. I was that drummer. Wow. Talking about dreams, talking about words. Yes, that's how it happened. Now, that happened for me in 1972. Mm-hmm. In 1973, we recorded the Ecstasy album with Motown. The band had recorded three albums with Motown, Pain, Pleasure, Ecstasy. Off the Pleasure album came Funky Worm. When that 45 hit, Cameron, I was the drummer on the road. Mm-hmm. I told people, all the people say, Diamond, you record the drum, you know, on the album? No, I didn't. I got a 45 in my game room that the record company Westbound gave me for my promotion of the song. So I got to go 45 on my wall, but I didn't record it. And, but I promoted the song and played. Anybody saw that song live or, you know, when we were out, they saw me play it.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But then coincidentally after that, we went to, you know, to, the other record company, you know, and started the hits of, Skin Tight and all that ring of hits there. And that was around between 73 and 74.
And what was it like being out there with a different sound, having that full band, and even to this day still playing with that full band, not using computer generated sound effects, if you will, for the full band sound.
Man, computer generated sound effects. People out here using the same daggone tracks. People out here pantomiming in front of the public. They just don't know. They're playing everything. The horns, the drums, the vocals, the whatever, whatever. In some cases, if you want to listen very closely, you can hear the voices of people who aren't even here on this earth presently. Mm. Are you kidding me right now? It's like, wow, now that's deep. So when I say everything, I mean everything. You know, we are dinosaurs to a point. And I don't mean it doesn't hurt me at all because I'm still around.
Right.
But playing and singing live, everything that you hear is being performed. Not being programmed, not being processed, not being, you know, added. This is no additives or excessive things coming at you. We're doing everything that you hear, we are doing and saying. That's a rare entity today, Cameron, without a doubt.
That is cool. Now, for you to have the influence that you've had on other generations and for the other artists to pay tribute to you, if you will, with having samples included by so many other artists, what kind of a pat on the back is that for you?
I don't need no pat. I need money, Cameron. I'm tired of the pats. All the pats don't add up to a dime in the bank. Listen, on the serious side, Cameron, you know without a doubt, man. I think, you know, this band has been constantly within the medium of either advertisement or somebody sampling or movies coming out or whatever the deal is. And that's nothing but a blessing, man. That's, you know, after you hear artists that are coming out with some similar even sounds that they don't give me credit for, but I say, I know they got that from me right there. I hear Ohio players all in that, okay? Mm-hmm. That's okay, too, because I tell you, for the most part, we didn't come up with it. We did it, too. We just did it clever from anybody else at that time. It wasn't like we were developing music. Are you kidding me? It had been done. Notes had been played. We just played it in a way where it was new to the public, okay? Mm-hmm. New and kind of unique, you know what I mean? Without a doubt, you know, we developed a unique sound, and more importantly, we developed musicality within this band. We didn't stay within one realm. We were just not an R&B band. We were not just a funk band or a pop band or whatever. We played all kinds of music, all kinds of titles, and we pride ourselves in that. You know, we might have played Funky Worm, but we also played a song called Contradiction. Are you kidding me right now? How relevant is that to today? Our music has lasted because we were thinking about where we were going. We played a song called Little Lady Maria. Now, what funk band was writing songs about Little Lady Maria? We did, okay? What funk band would write a song called Angel? Or more importantly, Sweet Sticky Thing. Are you kidding me? What a title. What a title. What a song. This is not a funk band. You know, we had so much fun. Man, we were gunslingers with music at that time. Topics, titles, music, you know, musicianship. You know what I mean? The full rim, melody, you know, bass player, the melody of the drums, the whole trip, man. Listen, there was no band, I'll say this quite proudly, like the Ohio Players. At that time, we were a band, incorporated, integrated to a point we did everything ourselves, okay? Mm-hmm. We wrote, we produced, we mastered, we came up with concepts and designs, everything ourselves, okay? Three platinum albums in a row, 2 platinum albums in 1 year.
Yep.
Who does that? Like on the commercial, who does that? I don't know. The Ohio Players did, okay? You know what I mean? So that's where we were, you know? And it was, but Cameron, don't get me wrong. There were exceptional artists out at that time. I mean, just unbelievable music was being written in the 60s and 70s. Just daggone believable. Not to mention the 30s and 40s and 50s. I'm giving no disregard to, because music was music. It has been music for a long, long time. Until they started bringing this AI and these computers and these samplers and all that stuff did music change. And these vocoders and these voice correctors and all that kind of stuff. Because one thing I can say during a period of time, I know for myself, Aretha Franklin didn't need that. Stevie Wonder didn't need that, okay? Okay, Otis Redding didn't need that, okay? These people didn't need, are you kidding me? They didn't need to have no voice pitch correction. They could sing.
Right.
Okay, now what these people need to do is get back to the love of music, not the love of machines. That's what's going on in this world, okay? Get back to the love of doing it yourself, okay? Don't use nobody. You can be inventive using somebody else's stuff as they done, but it ain't the same. Mm-hmm. You didn't do it. You didn't do it. You know, one thing about masonry, they make the bricks. They build the daggone thing, okay? They can put their name on it. They did it. You know, it's pride. It's pride. You know what I mean? When I write a drum track, I ain't steal nothing from them. I wrote that drum. Who writes a drum track to skin tight except a diamond, a part like that? Who wrote it? I did. You know, that's a testament to the 10 happy years of private lessons, all-city orchestra, all-city band, music scholarships in the summertime, getting full rides to universities. That's a testament to how much time I put into that, that I was able to do that, okay? That's what it takes. It takes that to keep music being in this industry and lasting 50 years as I know it to be today because I'm still around, you know. It takes that to make it happen, as far as I'm concerned, Cameron. Now, yeah. I can be a little bit out there sometimes. But you'll straighten me out if I am, I'm sure.
Now, Diamond, looking back, the band started back in 59. We're now in 2023, and the amount of inspiration, the amount of, like you mentioned before, coming up with new stuff that had never been done before. I mean, the Hall of Fame, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I mean, have they knocked it all? I mean, have you guys heard any whispers or anything like that?
Cameron, I've been listening so ever closely for any knock, tick, or bang at my door, and I can say, no, they haven't. Mm. And I can also say, Cameron, at first, it didn't bother me to a point where it bothers me now, to a point where it has ruined my life and the expectations of it. But at first, I looked at it as to be what it is. The name of it exemplifies and says Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Now, I'm not causing any dispersions on anybody else other than that genre that has been elected and inducted to that facility. But when they chose to go outside that genre of rock and roll and they started to take other people of which they have entered my category, I think thusly, and I only have one horn to blow here, Cameron, but I will blow the horn of Ohio Players, okay, AP, for life, okay? Other people, I would say quite honestly, probably are deserving likewise. But as a mouthpiece for the Ohio Players, for 51 years being in this band, I think we have done more than what the qualifications say that you must do to get in. I think we are more than deserving, not more than anybody else in there, but just as much as some people in there, as to our contribution that we have made to music and artists and the advancement of this funk interim or category that we have been put on as musicians within this band. Speaking for myself, Rolling Stones has named me out of the top recorded 100 drummers, number 72 of all time. So that puts me in a band with the top 100 drummer in it. What else do we need to say we haven't influenced others of all kinds? I mean, from the Red Hot Chili Peppers to Soundgarden to, you know, I mean, like, I mean, friends of mine, like, you know, Alex Beyong, you know, I mean, just it goes on and on. We have Snoop. I mean, just on and on and on and on. You know, I mean, Disney has used us in some Guardians of the Galaxy, all kinds of movies we have influenced and been used throughout the years. Advertisement, Burger King, whatever, the daggone Galaxy 4 user. I almost bought a car from the royalties of the Galaxy 4. You know, so, I mean, what else do we have to do? More, you know, what's more of a slap in the face that this facility is in OH10. It sits 200 miles from my house. Yeah. I have never left this OH10, the state of OH10. I am pro-Ohio all the way. I'm an Ohio player. What a smack in my face to bring somebody else in from another state with as much as this band has done, not only for the state, but for the world in our contribution to music. We've been playing all around the world. How dare you? How dare you? I'm insulted. Cameron, I'm really insulted, you know? And you know, part of it after a while is like, you know how you get to a point, Cameron, you say, I really don't care anymore. You know what I mean? What does it mean? Listen, on the other side of it, only because we have been blessed so many ways. Yeah. I cannot, listen, Cameron, I cannot be negative one daggone iota and say that I would truly have missed it, okay? Because I have never missed it, Cameron. So many beautiful things happening in my life. Are you kidding? Every daggone second of the day, personally. So I don't and will never miss it. I will say that quite truthfully. Listen to me. Right now, today, my daughter, I just found this out by looking at the advertisement, is the first black director on Broadway in 40 years. She's directing The Wiz that's going to Broadway. She is co-directing The Notebook that will be on Broadway. She's the first female black director in 40 years. You think I'm worried about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? You know, my other daughter's an HR director for the Dayton Public Schools. You know, my life, my family, everything is, there's more things more important to me. Now, I tell you, on the other side, Cameron, some of the Ohio players, Satch, Pee Wee, Marshall, Sugarfoot, and some, even Greg to that point, because he was on the ridge, all of them are gone, okay? It would be great before any of the rest of us leave. The three of us presently in this band, Billy, Beck, Chet, and myself, out of a 10-piece band that we have on stage. And I mentioned the rest of the guys' name, Johnny and Mike, Johnny Cotton and Mike and Kenny Anderson, Mike Allenby, and Ronald Nooks on stage, along with Billy Beck, Chet, and myself. Then we got road manager Bobby Greenlee and stage manager Jerome Thomas and house engineer Jerome Watson. All of them are part of the family. So I got to mention all my guys. But, you know, I would like for us, some of us to see it, you know, and get in and be able to say thank you. You know what I mean? For the work that we are presently doing. I've been with this band 51 years, man. You know, we're still out there. Even after COVID, 2 years taken out of my life, that we were really, really, really rolling before then. Because Cameron, that first gig after COVID, I thought Muhammad Ali had come out of the grave and just beat the shit out of me for about 12 or 13 rounds, man. Just, you know, I wasn't fighting hard, but I didn't last a round. I mean, it was, you know, it was so hard, you know what I mean? At this age, you know what I mean? But things are going well now. So, you know, we've gone through the mickmar of this entertainment business, and we haven't given up. So that should be something that should be worth getting into the Hall of Fame. You know, just the fact that we're still around and we're still in business. It was 2 months ago that we were in Stockbridge, Georgia, and it was the first occasion that I had to play with one of my hero groups, Tower Power.
Oh, wow.
We rocked it that night in Stockbridge, Georgia. I got to meet David Garibaldi. He said I was his hero. I told him he was my hero. We went to Heroes, giving selfies back and forth. Man, what a night. You know what I mean? That keeps things moving with us, you know. And never, in fact, I don't ever think I had seen them live. Now, we have played in different occasions where they've been on one night, we've been on another night, different state fairs and all that stuff, because we do state fairs all the time, all that kind of stuff. But, and the band had gone to see them on one occasion, you know, went in, but somehow I wasn't feeling good or whatever, but I never seen them. So it was just great night. And things like that keep happening in our lives, man. So I have nothing to say about anything other than thank you very much when they let me in, Cameron.
That's right. That's right. Now you talk about your daughter and the pride you take in not only influencing another generation, but I mean, you're doing it right there in your own family and Broadway. I mean, how cool is that?
Man, that's the coolest thing ever. Listen, she did her thing. She was a musician. She is a musician. She plays about four instruments. She's a choreographer. She dances and sings. You know, she went to Amden, New York. She got a full scholarship to Amden, you know. She was in the Junior Philharmonic Orchestra here in Dayton, Ohio, you know. She practiced. She got that from her daddy. She could tell you a story about the first solo contest she went to where she was ill-prepared, and she came and was crying at her daddy about, you know what I mean? You know, when her daddy told her, well, you know how to make that happen and stop that next year. Practice. And that she'll tell you that story just like I did, okay? So, yeah, you come up with those kind of, you know, and I'm so proud. Nonetheless, it took her to do it, Karen, you know. She'll be the last one to spout about her daddy, who her daddy is. It's all about her right now, and she's doing a fine job. She is literally on fire. But she went through the process. She went 3 years over in Europe and did musicals and stuff like that in Europe. She did the original musical Rent on Broadway. She was in Aida with Elton John and Tim Rice on Broadway. She did the leading part on Broadway of Rent, you know, and Aida. You know what I mean? So she did her due diligence to be where she's at. She's always wanted to change. Like when she was playing her instruments one day, she came home, she said, Daddy, you know what? She's in a pit orchestra. She said, I'm not going to play in a pit orchestra no more. I said, why? She said, they can't see you down there. And that never bothered me, Cameron. No. She said, it bothered her. She said, I'm going to take acting. Right there, she just changed, like, you know, a light bulb. She went into acting. Just like when she was in Renton doing Aida, whatever, she said, you know what, Dad? You know, you have to go to work eight shows a week or whatever. The director's on. I'm going into directing. And she has, okay? And she's a Disney director, and she's doing quite well.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, we talked about the Hall of Fame. I know that there is a petition. If folks would like to be a part of the petition to get the Ohio players in, where can folks find out more about that, Diamond?
You can go to the Facebook page, official Ohio Players Facebook page, and it will take you directly to the signature and where you can sign up to petition us getting in. I don't know if a petition work. We need like millions. You know what I mean? We don't need like. I think there's something. You know, Cameron. I'm amazed by how the network or the internet will work for some, but it won't work for others.
Right.
I'm amazed by how people will jump on certain things, you know, and for what reason, okay? Now, I don't know if it takes begging or paying everybody some money or whatever the deal is. Somebody needs to let me know because we need your help, okay? And all it takes is your dad going in there and signing up thinking we should, you know, give me a vote of getting in the Rock Hall. Won't cost you nothing. When you say it's free, Cameron, normally that brings in a lot of people right there when you say free, no matter what it is.
Right.
But when they find out you might not be getting no hot dogs free, then maybe they back out of something, you know, and they're thinking about food. I don't know. But we need everybody to come in and sign, okay?
That's cool. Yeah. Now, Diamond, what's the band doing now? What's on the new the near horizon?
Oh man, we are next month. We're doing a hospital. It's not a fundraiser. I guess it's a holiday party in Atlanta, Georgia. It's on December 8th, and then thereafter. Right now, we're booked in February for a gig at Bethesda Blues and Jazz in the Washington D.C. area. I think it's around the 16th, and right now we have already booked the Ohio State Fair, August the 2nd for next year. We're at the Ohio State Fair. We have cruises and all kinds of stuff that are calling in and other gigs that people are putting us on. We've been working with Live Nation, doing some of the funk festivals and stuff like that. Other things are being scheduled. Our phone is ringing, which is good. Now, when your phone's not ringing, that's bad, okay? But when you've already been booked for the Ohio State Fairs and some other fairs, as we have been, that means they want you. Yep. So we're doing a fine job out there, man. We had a good year last year. We're looking forward to a great year this year.
That's right. Well, Diamond, if folks want to follow on all the social media, what's website and everything, is the website the best place to get the link to all the rest of it?
The website, the official Ohio Players website, will take you everywhere you might have interest in going about the Ohio Players. We have somebody that's monitoring that situation. Their name is Raven Ward. We have merchandise online that you can buy. You can stay in touch with the band. You can get newsletters from the band. All of that is being orchestrated on a multimedia site, and we have all that available for all our friends and fans. Yes.
That's right. Well, Diamond, it has been a pleasure to catch up. I had a little more hair, and you had a little more color in your hair as well, I think, last time we talked.
Yeah, but you know, I still have hair. I want you to know I still
you still got
hair,
that.
Okay. I'm not going to let comments say the only cool guys are the ones with no hair. I'm not taking that comment. You can be cool with hair, too. I heard you on my TV. Don't say that to me. Tell them players got hair. Players got hair. That's all I can say.
That's good stuff. Well, Diamond, brother, it is great to reconnect again, and you've been an influence to me. I appreciate you showing a little respect to me early in my career, and it's meant a lot to me over the last 20 years. I appreciate you, brother.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you even saying that, okay? And if I've been, as I mentioned, an influence at all, you know, I only, you know, want to continue that and influence others in a positive way. You know, that's again what I think we're here for. I wish you nothing but the best. You take care of yourself, man, and many good dreams to you. All right,
you as well, and hopefully we'll catch up again real soon, brother.
All right, bro, see ya.
Now, we changed the clocks yesterday, and here is just how unpopular it is. We hate it even when we're gaining an hour of sleep. 70% of Americans say that they were dreading falling back. The top reasons are it gets light too early now, it messes with our sleep schedule, it affects our mental health, and it means it gets dark earlier. Now, a separate poll found 68% of us want to stop shifting the clocks twice a year. Only 17% want to keep the things the way they are. 14% say they're still undecided. Now, of the people who do want to stop, 40% want to move to permanent daylight saving time with later sunsets. 28% want to shift to permanent standard time, which is what we're in now. And 11% say, whatever, just pick one. Now, the other 21% think one option is probably better than the other. But somehow, they still don't have an opinion on which one. Now, the poll also found 28% of us are true early risers and wake up between 6 a.m. during the week. 13% usually wake up after 9 a.m., and everyone else somewhere in between. Well, I do want to thank you for joining us on this sixth episode in Season 4 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you ever have a comment, question, or anything else you'd like to know, you can hit me up on the socials, Instagram, X, formerly Twitter, TikTok, and Facebook at The Cameron Dole. You can also subscribe to my YouTube channel, Cameron Dole. And if you have a special guest idea, just email me, gqwithcam@gmail.com. I do want to thank our good friend Brandon Allen for coming up with our theme music, and we're going to let him play us out. Hope you guys have a great rest of your week. New episodes are upcoming.